The room in our home where I have done most of my Zoom meetings since March has a bookshelf directly opposite where I sit. And on that shelf is a photo of our family taken in the late 1990s when the girls were young and we had gone whitewater rafting on the Ocoee National River in the Smoky Mountains. This is a TVA river. It was the site for the 96 Olympics out of Atlanta for their whitewater sports. And for a few hours each day, the power company diverts water down a hydroelectric chute that sends water cascading down a stretch of riverbed to create a series of Class 3 and Class 4 rapids that bear descriptive names like Diamond Splitter and Double Suck. The day our family went rafting, there was a cohort of foreign exchange students from Japan who arrived in the U.S. only the day before. This was their first exposure to America, if you can believe it. They spoke very little English, and their river guide from Appalachia spoke absolutely no Japanese. The guide in our boat took us through the initial rapids first so that we could spot the others below. I think he anticipated something. And from our position downstream, we watched as the raft carrying these young students from Japan eased toward the pinch point of the first rapids. We heard their guide in the back of their boat yelling, "All forward hard!" which meant that they should all paddle full on to create enough momentum to carry their raft through. But that was lost in translation. And we watched as they met the turbulent waters by throwing their arms up and screaming, some in delight, I suspect many in fear. And they left it without the paddling, insufficient speed to glide through. The boat flexed mid-raft and then boomeranged back out flat, in the process catapulting a few of the students into the water. The first set of rapids is known as Slingshot. Now, personal protection equipment spared them any injury. I need to be quick to add that. We pulled them out of the water from our well-positioned rescue craft. But the second rapids didn't bode much better. But it was only after that that their foreign exchange chaperone taught their raft guide a few key phrases in Japanese. And then by the next rapids, all involved adapted sufficiently to make it through the run with no more unplanned expulsions. But you can tell it's a memory that I hold fast to even today. The photo in our room at the deanery has served as a visio divina of sorts for me this year, this 2020. When it seems like life has thrown us all sorts and a series of challenges, much lost in translation, and it becomes in key for us to develop the ability to adapt. And in it all this year, there is this prevailing sense of foreboding about what's next. We've said it to one another. But even so, intermingled with the fear and uncertainty we've all experienced, there have been joys and new discoveries as well. Things we've learned about ourselves and each other and about our world. And tonight we gather, albeit from a distance, to hear the Christmas story once more. We may want to hear it as uniformly sweet, the serene waters of a beautiful, easy birth. But if we're really honest, the story is not free of hardship and gloom, and it's a timely story for us. a census had forced Mary and Joseph to flee their familiar home and travel by foot 100 miles south to Bethlehem. Mary, 9 months pregnant, no less, only to be told that there was no one who would take them in. There was no room in the village. A comical turn, if not so utterly tragic. They were homeless and exhausted and unwelcome. Mary and Joseph knew real fear that night, real uncertainty. There was no guarantee of a healthy baby swaddled in the manger. The threat of civic violence rumbled outside those barn doors. And inside, the cows were lowing their distress signals that something was not right. Something was out of sorts. Animals have that sixth sense. Within days, Mary and Joseph receive stomach-turning news that the tyrannical king seeks to kill their baby boy in an indiscriminate slaughter simply because he fears he might lose his seat on his throne. The Holy Family must flee to Egypt, an even longer desert journey. Refugees, for no reason more than their lives were not deemed valuable enough to save by the powers that be. So rough is this story that we've embellished it a bit through the centuries to soften its edges. I mean, what parents in their right mind would let a drummer boy awaken a sleeping baby? Pa-rum-pum-pum-pum. The little Lord Jesus, no crying he makes. I don't think so. No, this is not some saccharine sweet fairy tale for Christians to tell each other that despite your experiences in the life journey, everything really is just peachy. It isn't. We need not pretend it is. The Christmas story can hold the weighty parts of our lives. But neither is this story bereft of hope and delight. Shepherds bear witness to this truth. From their lowly station, they find reason to celebrate and choose to share their joy with others. A caravan of immigrants from the east come to pay their respects also. Guided by a planetary convergence, that served them as a starry light of hope in that moment. They just had to pay attention. Such gifts of hopeful grace and connection have been part of our journey for us this year too. Experiences that have helped us find our bearings and make our way. Back on Thanksgiving Day last month, the New York Times published a collection of gratitude testimonials. They invited people to just submit their points of gratitude, 6-word limit points, pithy testimonials. They received over 10,000. Here are a few amidst the gloomy backdrop of this difficult year. 6 words each. The crinkling eye above the mask. Pandemic baby after years of trying. Water cooler chats with my 6-year-old son. Windows have never been so important. No shame in elastic waist pants. Ambulance took him. He came home. Our kids after my wife died. And one more. Healthcare workers, healthcare workers, healthcare workers. I wonder if you might devote some time this Christmas holiday to naming your own 6-word statements of hope and gratitude and share them with others. May they be shining stars to guide you into a new year. There's an ancient proverb that says, it is better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. Christmas draws on such wisdom and draws on the dark night as the locus for divine immanence. Mary and Joseph trusted that. They invite us to trust it as well. Which is why in just a little bit we will conclude this service with the singing of Silent Night. Light a candle wherever you are for that experience. Turn down the incandescent glare of light bulbs around you. Let your eyes adjust to the aura of new birth emanating from a very difficult year, and know that God is there with you, has been all along. Christmas does not deny the gloomy parts of life. It would make no sense, really, if it did. Christmas can hold it all, can hold us all in its bosom of hope that God is up to something in all of this. We need only believe that to give birth to something in our own right. A nascent hope for a new year, a new world, a new way guided by the light of Christ in our lives. So 6 words of gratitude and hope. Here are my thoughts as I conclude. For you, this community gathered tonight. For swaddled babies and courageous parents. For Christ's peace come to us. For Christmas hope guiding the way. And finally, Merry Christmas, dear friends. Merry Christmas.